Vampires could not come out in daylight. That was a rule. But until last night, I had known vampires could not fly. So much for what I knew. Whoever it was had been expecting Philip. I pulled away from the curb. Why had they sent him at his flirtatious best? Had he been sent to charm me? Or was he the only human they could get at short notice? The only daytime member of their little club, except for Monica. And I wasn't real fond of her right now. That was just dandy with me. I didn't think Philip was lying about the freak parties, but what did I know about Philip? He stripped at guilty pleasures, not exactly a character reference. He was a vampire junkie, better and better. Was all that pain an act? Was he luring me someplace just as Monica had? I didn't know, and I needed to know. There was one place I could go that might have the answers. The only place in the district where I was truly welcome. Dead Dave's, a nice bar that served a mean hamburger. The proprietor was an ex-cop who'd been kicked off the force for being dead. Picky, picky. Dave liked to help out, but he resented the prejudice of his former comrades. So he talked to me, and I talked to the police. It was a nice little arrangement that let Dave be pissed off at the police and still help them. It made me nearly invaluable to the police. Since I was on retainer, that pleased Bert to no end. It being daytime, Dead Dave was tucked in his coffin, but Luther would be there. Luther was the daytime manager and bartender. He was one of the few people in the district who didn't have much to do with vampires, except for the fact that he worked for one. Life is never perfect. I actually found a parking place not far from Dave's. Daytime parking is a lot more open in the district. When the riverfront used to be human-owned businesses, there was never any parking on a weekend, day or night. It was one of the few positives of the new vampire laws. That and the tourism. St. Louis was a real hot spot for vampire watchers. The only place better was New York, but we had a lower crime rate. There was a gang that had gone all vampire in New York. They had spread to Los Angeles and tried to spread here. The police found the first recruits chopped into bite-sized pieces. Our vampire community prides itself on being mainstream. A vampire gang would be bad publicity, so they took care of it. I admired the efficiency of it, but wished they had done it differently. I had had nightmares for weeks about walls that bled and dismembered arms that crawled along the floor all by themselves. We never did find the heads. Chapter 22. Dead Dave's is all dark glass and glowing beer signs. At night, the front windows look like some sort of modern art featuring brand names. In the daylight, everything is muted. Bars are sort of like vampires. They're at their best after dark. There's something tired and wistful about a daytime bar. The air conditioning was up full blast like the inside of a freezer. It was almost a physical jolt after the skin-melting heat outside. I stood just inside the door and waited for my eyes to adjust to the twilight interior. Why are all bars so damn dark, like caves, places to hide? The air smelled of stale cigarettes no matter when you came in, as if years of smoke had settled into the upholstery like aromatic ghosts. Two guys in business suits were settled at the farthest booth from the door. They were eating and had manila folders spread across the tabletop. Working on a Saturday. Just like me. Well, maybe not just like me. I was betting that no one had threatened to tear their throats out. Of course, I could be wrong, but I doubted it. I was betting the worst threat they had had this week was lack of job security. Ah, the good old days. There was a man crouched on a bar stool nursing a tall drink. His face was already slack, his movements very slow and precise as if he were afraid he'd spill something. Drunk at 1:30 in the afternoon, not a good sign for him. But it wasn't my business. You can't save everybody. In fact, there are days when I think you can't save anyone. Each person has to save himself first. Then you can move in and help. I have found this philosophy does not work during a gun battle or a knife fight either. Outside of that, it works just fine. Luther was polishing glasses with a very clean white towel. He looked up when I slipped up on the bar stool. He nodded, a cigarette dangling from his thick lips. Luther is large, nay, fat. There is no other word for it. But it is hard fat, rock solid, almost a kind of muscle. His hands are huge knuckled and as big as my face. Of course, my face is small. He is a very dark black man, nearly purplish black like mahogany. The creamy chocolate of his eyes is yellow-edged from too much cigarette smoke. I don't think I've ever seen Luther without a cig clasped between his lips. He is overweight, chain smokes, and the gray in his hair marks him as over 50, yet he's never sick. Good genetics, I guess.
What'll it be, Anita?
His voice matched his body, deep and gravelly. The usual. He poured me a short glass of orange juice. Vitamins. We pretended it was a screwdriver, so my penchant for sobriety wouldn't give the bar a bad name. Who wants to get drunk when there are teetotalers in the crowd? And why in the world would I keep coming to a bar if I didn't drink? I sipped my fake screwdriver and said, I need some info.
Figured that. What you need?
I need information on a man named Philip. Dances at Guilty Pleasures. One thick eyebrow raised.
Vamp?
I shook my head. Vampire junkie. He took a big drag on his cig, making the end glow like a live coal. He blew a huge puff of smoke politely away from me.
What you want to know about him?
Is he trustworthy? He stared at me for a heartbeat, then he grinned.
Trustworthy? Hell, Anita, he's a junkie. Don't matter what he's strung out on, drugs, liquor, sex, vampires, no diff. No junkie's trustworthy, you know that.
I nodded. I did know that, but what could I do? I have to trust him, Luther. He's all I got.
Damn, girl, you are moving in the wrong circles.
I smiled. Luther was the only person I let call me girl. All women were girl, all men, fella. I need to know if you've heard anything really bad about him, I said.
What are you up to? He asked.
I can't say. I'd share it if I could, or if I thought it would do any good. He studied me for a moment, cig dribbling ash onto the countertop. He wiped up the ash absent-mindedly with his clean white towel.
Okay, Anita, you've earned the right to say no this once. But next time you better have something to share.
I smiled. Cross my heart. He just shook his head and pulled a fresh cigarette out of the pack he always kept behind the bar. He took one last drag of the nearly burned cig, then clasped the fresh one between his lips. He put the glowing orange end of the old cig against the fresh white tip and sucked air. The paper and tobacco caught, flared orange-red, and he stubbed out the old cig in the already full ashtray he carried with him from place to place like a teddy bear.
I know they got a dancer down at the club that is a freak. He does the party circuit and is real popular with a certain sort of vamp.
Luther shrugged, a massive movement like mountains hiccuping.
Don't have no dirt on him except he's a junkie and he does the circuit. Shit, Anita, that's bad enough. Sounds like someone to stay away from.
I would if I could. It was my turn to shrug. But you haven't heard anything else about him? He thought for a moment, sucking on his new cigarette.
No, not a word. He ain't a big player in the district. He's a professional victim. Most of the talk is about the predators down here, not the sheep.
He frowned.
Just a minute. I got something, an idea.
He thought very carefully for a few minutes, then smiled broadly.
Yeah, got some news on a predator. Vamp calls himself Valentine, wears a mask. He been bragging that he did old Philip the first time.
So? I said.
Not the first time he was a junkie, girl, the first time, period. Valentine claims he jumped the boy when he was small, did him good. Claims old Philip liked it so much, that's why he's a junkie.
Dear God. I remembered the nightmares, the reality of Valentine. What would it have been like to have been small when it happened? What would it have done to me?
You know Valentine?
Luther asked. I nodded. Yeah. He ever say how old Philip was when the attack took place? He shook his head.
No, but word is anything over 12 is too old for Valentine unless it's revenge. He's a real big one for revenge. Word is, if the master didn't keep him in line, he'd be damn dangerous.
You bet your sweet ass he's dangerous.
You know him.
It wasn't a question. I looked up at Luther. I need to know where Valentine stays during the day.
That's two bits of information for nothing. I don't think so.
He wears a mask because I doused him with holy water about 2 years ago. Until last night, I thought he was dead, and he thought the same about me. He's going to kill me if he can.
You awful hard to kill, Anita.
There's a first time, Luther, and that's all it takes.
I hear that.
He started polishing already clean glasses.
I don't know. Word gets out we've given you daytime resting places, it could go bad for us. They could burn this place to the ground with us inside.
You're right. I don't have a right to ask. But I sat there on the bar stool staring at him, willing him to give me what I needed. Risk your life for me, old buddy, old pal. I'd do the same for you.
Right. If you could swear you wouldn't use the info to kill him, I could tell you, Luther said.
It'd be a lie.
You got a warrant to kill him? He asked.
Not active, but I could get one.
Would you wait for it?
It's illegal to kill a vampire without a court order of execution, I said. He stared at me.
That ain't the question. Would you jump the gun to make sure of the kill?
Might. He shook his head.
You gonna be up on charges one of these days, girl. Murder is a serious rap.
I shrugged. Beats getting your throat torn out. He blinked.
Well now.
He didn't seem to know what to say, so he polished a sparkling glass over and over in his big hands.
I'll have to ask Dave. If he says it's okay, you can have it.
I finished my orange juice and paid up, a little heavy on the tip to keep things above board. Dave would never admit he helped me because of my tie with the police, so money had to exchange hands, even if it wasn't nearly what the information was worth.
Thanks, Luther. Word on the street is that you met the master last night, that true?
You know about that before or after the fact? I asked. He looked pained.
Anita, we would have told you if we'd known, gratis.
I nodded. Sorry, Luther. It's been a rough few nights.
I'll bet. So the rumor's true?
What could I say? Deny it? A lot of people seem to know. I guess you can't even trust the dead to keep a secret. Maybe. I might as well have said yes, because I didn't say no. Luther understood the game. He nodded.
What did they want with you?
Can't say.
Okay, Anita. You be damn careful. You might want to get some help if there's anybody you can trust.
Trust? It wasn't lack of trust. There may be only two ways out of this mess, Luther. Death would be my choice. A quick death would be best, but I doubt I'll get the chance if things go bad. What friend am I supposed to drag into that? His round, dark face stared at me.
I don't have no answers, girl. I wish I did.
So do I. The phone rang. Luther answered it. He looked at me and carried the phone down on its long cord.
For you,
he said. I cradled the phone against my cheek.
Yes?
It's Ronnie.
Her voice was suppressed excitement, a kid on Christmas morning. My stomach tightened. You have something?
There's a rumor going around humans against vampires. A death squad designed to wipe the vampires off the face of the earth.
You have proof? A witness?
Not yet.
I sighed before I could stop myself.
Come on, Anita. This is good news.
I cupped my hand over the phone and whispered,
I can't take a rumor about HAV to the master. The vampires would slaughter them. A lot of innocent people would get killed, and we're not even sure that HAV is really behind the murders.
All right,
Ronnie said.
I'll have something more concrete by tomorrow, I promise. Bribe or threat, I'll get the information.
Thanks, Ronnie.
What are friends for? Besides, Bert's gonna have to pay for overtime and bribes. I always love the look of pain when he has to part with money.
I grinned into the phone. Me too.
What are you doing tonight?
Going to a party.
What?
I explained as briefly as I could. After a long silence, she said,
That is very freaky.
I agreed with her. You keep working your end, I'll try from this side. Maybe we'll meet in the middle.
It'd be nice to think so.
Her voice sounded warm, almost angry.
What's wrong? You're going in without backup, aren't you?
she asked. You're alone, I said.
But I'm not surrounded by vampires and freakazoids.
If you're at HAV headquarters, that last is debatable.
Don't be cute. You know what I mean.
Yes, Ronnie, I know what you mean. You are the only friend I have who can handle herself. I shrugged, realized she couldn't see it, and said, Anybody else would be like Catherine, sheep among wolves, and you know it.
What about another animator?
Who? Jameson thinks vampires are nifty. Bert talks a good game, but he doesn't endanger his lily-white ass. Charles is a good enough corpse raiser, but he's squeamish, and he's got a 4-year-old kid. Manny doesn't hunt vampires anymore. He spent 4 months in the hospital being put back together after his last hunt.
If I remember correctly, you were in the hospital too, she said.
A broken arm and a busted collarbone were my worst injuries, Ronnie. Manny almost died. Besides, he's got a wife and 4 kids. Manny had been the animator who trained me. He taught me how to raise the dead and how to slay vampires, though admittedly I had expanded on Manny's teachings. He was a traditionalist, a steak-and-garlic man. He had carried a gun, but as backup, not as a primary tool. If modern technology will allow me to take out a vampire from a distance rather than straddling its waist and pounding a stake through its heart, why not? 2 years ago, Rosita, Manny's wife, had come to me and begged me not to endanger her husband anymore. 52 was too old to hunt vampires, she had said. What would happen to her and the children? Somehow I had gotten all the blame, like a mother whose favorite child had been led astray by the neighborhood ruffians. She had made me swear before God that I would never again ask Manny to join me on a hunt. If she hadn't cried, I would have held out, refused. Crying was damned unfair in a fight. Once a person started to cry, you couldn't talk anymore. You suddenly just wanted them to stop crying, stop hurting, stop making you feel like the biggest scumbucket in the world. Anything to stop the tears. Ronnie was quiet on the other end of the phone.
All right, but you be careful.
Careful as a virgin on her wedding night, I promise. She laughed.
You are incorrigible.
Everybody tells me that, I said.
Watch your back.
You do the same.
I will.
She hung up. The phone buzzed dead in my hands.
Good news? Luther asked.
Yeah. Humans against vampires had a death squad. Maybe. But maybe was better than what I'd had before. Look, folks, nothing up my sleeves, nothing in my pockets, no idea in hell what I was doing. Just blundering around trying to track down a killer that has taken out 2 master vampires. If I was on the right track, I'd attract attention soon, which meant someone might try to kill me. Wouldn't that be fun? I would need clothes that showed off my vampire scars and allowed me to hide weapons. It would not be an easy combination to find. I would have to spend the afternoon shopping. I hate to shop. I consider it one of life's necessary evils, like Brussels sprouts and high-heeled shoes. Of course, it beat the heck out of having my life threatened by vampires. But wait, we could go shopping now and be threatened by vampires in the evening. A perfect way to spend a Saturday night.
Chapter 23. I transferred all the smaller bags into 1 big bag to leave 1 hand free for my gun. You'd be amazed what a nice target you make juggling 2 armloads of shopping bags. First, drop the bags, that is, if one of the handles isn't tangled over your wrist, then reach for your gun, pull, aim, fire. By the time you do all that, the bad guy has shot you twice and is walking away humming Dixie between his teeth. I had been downright paranoid all afternoon, aware of everyone near me. Was I being followed? Had that man looked too long at me? Was that woman wearing a scarf around her neck because she had bite marks? By the time I went for the car, my neck and shoulders were knotted into 1 painful ache. The most frightening thing I'd seen all afternoon had been the prices on the designer clothing. The world was still bright blue and heat-soaked when I went for my car. It's easy to forget the passage of time in a mall. It is air-conditioned, climate-controlled, a private world where nothing real touches you. Disneyland for shopaholics. I shut my packages in the trunk and watched the sky darken. I knew what fear felt like. A leaden balloon in the pit of your gut. A nice, quiet dread. I shrugged to loosen my shoulders.
rotated my neck until it popped. Better. But still tight. I needed some aspirin. I had eaten in the mall, something I almost never did. The moment I smelled the food stalls, I had gone for them, starved. The pizza had tasted like thin cardboard with imitation tomato paste spread over it. The cheese had been rubbery and tasteless. Yum, yum. Mall food. Truth is, I love corn dog on a stick and Mrs. Fields cookies. I got one piece of pizza with just cheese the way I like it, but one piece with everything. I hate mushrooms and green peppers. Sausage belongs on the breakfast table, not on pizza. I didn't know which bothered me more, that I ordered it in the first place, or that I had eaten half of it before I realized what I was doing. I was craving food that I normally hated. Why? One more question without an answer. Why did this one scare me? My neighbor, Mrs. Pringle, was walking her dog back and forth on the grass in front of our apartment building. I parked and unloaded my one overstuffed bag from the trunk. Mrs. Pringle is over 60, nearly 6 feet tall, stretched too thin with age. Her faded blue eyes are bright and curious behind silver-rimmed glasses. Her dog, Custard, is a Pomeranian. He looks like a golden dandelion fluff with cat feet. Mrs. Pringle waved at me, and I was trapped. I smiled and walked over to them. Custard began jumping up on me like he had springs in his tiny legs. He looked like a wind-up toy. His yapping was frequent and insistent, joyous. Custard knows I don't like him, and in his twisted doggy mind he is determined to win me over. Or maybe he just knows it irritates me. Whatever.
Anita, you naughty girl, why didn't you tell me you had a beau?
Mrs. Pringle asked. I frowned.
A beau? A boyfriend, she said.
I didn't know what in the world she was talking about. What do you mean?
Be coy if you wish, but when a young woman gives her apartment key to a man, it means something.
That lead balloon in my gut floated up a few inches. Did you see someone going in my apartment today? I worked very hard at keeping my face and voice casual.
Yes, your nice young man. Very handsome.
I wanted to ask what he looked like, but if he was my boyfriend with a key to my apartment, I should know. I couldn't ask. Very handsome. Could it be Philip? But why?
When did he stop by? Oh, around 2 this afternoon. I was just coming out to walk Custard as he was going in.
Did you see him leave? She was staring at me a little too hard.
No. Anita, was he not supposed to be in your home? Did I let a burglar get away?
No. I managed a smile and almost a whole laugh. I just didn't expect him today, that's all. If you see anyone going into my apartment, just let them. I'll have friends going in and out for a few days. Her eyes had narrowed. Her delicate boned hands were very still. Even Custard was sitting in the grass, panting up at me.
Anita Blake, she said,
and I was reminded that she was a retired schoolteacher. It was that kind of voice.
What are you up to?
Nothing, really. I've just never given my key to a man before, and I'm a little unsure about it. Jittery. I gave her my best wide-eyed, innocent look. I resisted the urge to bat my eyes, but everything else was working. She crossed her arms over her stomach. I don't think she believed me.
If you are that nervous about this young man, then he is not the right one for you. If he was, you wouldn't be jittery.
I felt light with relief. She believed.
You're probably right. Thank you for the advice. I may even take it.
I felt so good I patted Custard on top of his furry little head. I heard Mrs. Pringle say as I walked away,
Now, Custard, do your business and let's go upstairs.
For the second time in the same day, I might have an intruder in my apartment. I walked down the hushed corridor and drew my gun. A door opened. A man and 2 children walked out. I slipped my gun in my hand in the shopping bag, pretending to search for something. I listened to their footsteps echo down the stairs. I couldn't just sit out here with a gun. Someone would call the police. Everybody was home from work, eating dinner, reading the paper, playing with the kids. Suburban America was awake and alert. You could not walk through it with a gun drawn. I carried the shopping bag in my left hand in front of me, gun and right hand still inside it. If worse came to worse, I'd shoot through the bag. I walked 2 doors past my apartment and dug my keys out of my purse. I sat the shopping bag against the wall and transferred the gun to my left hand. I could shoot left-handed, not as well, but it would have to do. I held the gun parallel to my thigh and hoped nobody would come the wrong way down the hall and see it. I knelt by the door, keys cupped in my right hand, quiet, not jingling this time. I learned fast. I held the gun in front of my chest and inserted the keys. The lock clicked. I flinched and waited for gunshots or noise or something. Nothing. I slipped the keys into my pocket and switched the gun back to my right hand. With just my wrist and part of my arm in front of the door, I turned the knob and pushed, hard. The door swung back and banged against the far wall. Nobody there. No gunshots at the door. Silence. I was crouched by the door jamb, gun straight out, scanning the room. There was no one to see. The chair, still facing the door, was empty this time. I would almost have been relieved to see Edward. Footsteps pounded up the stairs at the end of the hall. I had to make a decision. I reached my left hand back and got the shopping bag, never taking eyes or gun from the apartment. I scrambled inside, shoving the bag ahead of me. I shoved the door closed, still crouched by the floor. The aquarium heater clicked, then whirred, and I jumped. Sweat was oozing down my spine. The brave vampire slayer, if they could only see me now. The apartment felt empty. There was no one here but me, but just in case, I searched in closets under beds. Playing Dirty Harry as I slammed doors and flattened myself against walls. I felt like a fool, but I would have been a bigger fool to have trusted the apartment was empty and been wrong. There was a shotgun on the kitchen table, along with 2 boxes of ammo. A sheet of white typing paper lay under it. In neat black letters it said, "Anita, you have 24 hours." I stared at the note, reread it. Edward had been here. I don't think I breathed for a minute. I was picturing my neighbor chatting with Edward. If Mrs. Pringle had hesitated at his lie, showed fear, would he have killed her? I didn't know. I just didn't know. Damn it, I was like a plague. Everyone around me was in danger, but what could I do? When in doubt, take a deep breath and keep moving. A philosophy I have lived by for years. I've heard worse, really. The note meant I had 24 hours before Edward came for the location of Nikolaos's daytime retreat. If I didn't give it to him, I would have to kill him. I might not be able to do that. I told Ronnie we were professionals, but if Edward was a professional, then I was an amateur, and so was Ronnie. Heavy damn sigh. I had to get dressed for the party. There just wasn't time to worry about Edward. I had other problems tonight. My answering machine was blinking and I switched it on. Ronnie's voice first, telling me what she had already told me about HAV. Evidently she had called here first before contacting me at Dave's bar. Then, "Anita, this is Philip. I know the location for the party. Pick me up in front of Guilty Pleasures at 6:30. Bye." The machine clicked, whirred, and was silent. I had 2 hours to dress and be there. Plenty of time. My average time for makeup is 15 minutes. Hair takes less because all I do is run a brush through it. Presto, I'm presentable. I don't wear makeup often, so when I do, I always feel like it's too dark, too fake. But I always get compliments on it, like, "Why don't you wear eyeshadow more often? It really brings out your eyes." Or my favorite, "You look so much better in makeup." All the above implies that without makeup, you look like a candidate for the spinster farm. One piece of makeup I don't use is base. I can't imagine smearing cake over my whole face. I own 1 bottle of clear nail polish, but it isn't for my fingers. It's for my pantyhose. If I wear a pair of hose once without snagging them, I've had a very good day. I stood in front of the full-length mirror in the bedroom. The top slipped over my head with 1 thin strap. There was no back. It tied across the small of my back in a cute little bow. I could have done without the bow, but otherwise it wasn't too bad. The top slipped into the black skirt, complete, dress-like without a break. The tan bandages on my hands clashed with the dress. Oh well. The skirt was full and swirled when I moved. It had pockets. Through those pockets were two thigh sheaths complete with silver knives. All I had to do was slip my hands in and come out with a weapon. Neat. Sweat is an interesting thing when you're wearing a thigh sheath. I'd not been able to figure out how to hide a gun on me. I don't care how many times you've seen women carry guns in a thigh holster on television, it is damn awkward. You walk like a duck with a wet diaper on. Hose and high-heeled black satin pumps completed the outfit. I had owned the shoes and the weapons. Everything else was new. One other new item was a cute black purse with a thin strap that would hang across my shoulders, leaving my hands free. I stuffed my smaller gun, the Firestar, into it. I know. By the time I dug the gun from the depths of the purse, the bad guys would be feasting on my flesh, but it was better than not having it at all. I slipped my cross on, and the silver looked good against the black top. Unfortunately, I doubted the vampires would let me into the party wearing a blessed crucifix. Oh well, I'd leave it in the car, along with the shotgun and ammo. Edward had kindly left a box near the table. What I assumed he had brought the gun up in. What had he told Mrs. Pringle, that it was a present for me? Edward had said 24 hours, but 24 hours from when? Would he be here at dawn, bright and early, to torture the information out of me? Nah, Edward didn't strike me as a morning person. I was safe until at least afternoon. Probably.
Chapter 24. I slid into a no-parking zone in front of Guilty Pleasures. Philip was leaning against the building, arms loose at his sides. He wore black leather pants. The thought of leather in this heat made my knees break out in heat rash. His shirt was black fishnet, which showed off both scars and tan. I don't know if it was the leather or the fishnet, but the word sleazy came to mind. He had passed over some invisible line, from flirt to hustler. I tried to picture him at 12. It didn't work. Whatever had been done to him, he was what he was, and that was what I had to deal with. I wasn't a psychiatrist who could afford to feel sorry for the poor unfortunate. Pity is an emotion that can get you killed. The only thing more dangerous is blind hate, and maybe love. Philip pushed away from the wall and walked towards the car. I unlocked his door and he slid inside. He smelled of leather, expensive cologne, and faintly of sweat. I pulled away from the curb. Aggressive little outfit there, Philip. He turned to stare at me, face immobile, eyes hidden behind the same sunglasses he had worn earlier. He lounged in the seat, one leg bent and pressed against the door, the other spread wide, knee tucked up on the seat. Take 70 West. His voice was rough, almost hoarse. There's that moment when you are alone with a man and you both realize it. Alone together, there are always possibilities in that. There's a nearly painful awareness of each other. It can lead to awkwardness, to sex, or to fear, depending on the man and the situation. Well, we weren't having sex. You could make book on that. I glanced at Philip, and he was still turned towards me, lips slightly parted. He'd taken off the sunglasses. His eyes were very brown and very close. What the hell was going on? We were on the highway and up to speed. I concentrated on the cars around me, on driving, and tried to ignore him. But I could feel the weight of his gaze along my skin. It was almost a warmth. He began to slide along the seat towards me. I was suddenly very aware of the sound of leather rubbing along the upholstery, a warm animal sound. His arm slid across my shoulders, his chest leaning into me. What do you think you're doing, Philip? What's wrong? He breathed along my neck. Isn't this aggressive enough for you? I laughed. I couldn't help it. He stiffened beside me. I didn't mean to insult you, Philip. I just didn't picture fishnet and leather for tonight. He stayed too close to me, pressing, warm, his voice still strange and rough. What do you like, then? I glanced at him, but he was too close. I was suddenly staring into his eyes from 2 inches away. His nearness ran through me like an electric shock. I turned back to the road. Get on your side of the car, Philip. What turns you, he whispered in my ear, on? I'd had enough. How old were you the first time Valentine attacked you? His whole body jerked, and he scooted away from me.
Damn you.
He sounded like he meant it. I'll make you a deal, Philip. You don't have to answer my question, and I won't answer yours. His voice came out choked and breathy.
When did you see Valentine? Is he going to be here tonight? They promised me he wouldn't be here tonight.
His voice held a thick edge of panic. I had never heard such instant terror. I didn't want to see Philip afraid. I might start feeling sorry for him, and I couldn't afford that. Anita Blake, hard as nails, sure of herself, unaffected by crying men.
Right.
I did not talk to Valentine about you, Philip, I swear.
Then how?
He stopped, and I glanced at him. He'd slid the sunglasses back in place. His face looked very tight and still behind his dark glasses. Fragile. Sort of ruined the image. I couldn't stand it.
How did I find out what he did to you?
He nodded. I paid money to find out about your background. It came up. I needed to know if I could trust you.
Can you?
I don't know yet, I said. He took several deep breaths. The first two trembled, but each breath was a little more solid, until finally he had it under control, for now. I thought of Rebecca Miles and her small, starved-looking hands.
You can trust me, Anita. I won't betray you. I won't.
His voice sounded lost, a little boy with all his illusions stripped away. I couldn't stomp all over that lost child voice. But I knew and he knew that he would do anything the vampires wanted. Anything. Including betraying me. A bridge was rising over the highway, a tall latticework of gray metal. Trees hugged the road on either side. The summer sky was pale, watery blue, washed out by the heat and the bright summer sun. The car bumped up on the bridge, and the Missouri River stretched away on either side. The air seemed open and distant over the rolling water. A pigeon fluttered onto the bridge, settling beside maybe a dozen others, all strutting and burring over the bridge. I had actually seen seagulls on the river before, but you never saw one near the bridge, just pigeons. Maybe seagulls didn't like cars.
Where are we going, Philip? What?
I wanted to say, question too hard for you, but I resisted. It would have been like picking on him. We're across the river. What is our destination?
Take the Zumbel exit and turn right.
I did what he said. Zumbel veers to the right and spills you automatically to a turn lane. I sat at the light and turned on red when it was clear. There's a small gathering of stores to the left, then an apartment complex, then trees. Almost a woods, houses tucked back in them. A nursing home is next, and then a rather large cemetery. I always wondered what the people in the nursing home thought of living next door to a cemetery. Was it a ghoulish reminder? No pun intended. A convenience, just in case? The cemetery had been there a lot longer than the nursing home. Some of the stones went back to the early 1800s. I always thought the developer must have been a closet sadist to put the windows staring out over the rolling tombstone hills. Old age is enough of a reminder of what comes next. No visual aids are needed. Zumbel is lined with other things. Video store, kids' clothing boutique, a place that sold stained glass, gas stations, and a huge apartment complex proclaiming Sun Valley Lake. There actually was a lake large enough to sail on, if you were very careful. A few more blocks and we were in suburbia. Houses with tiny yards stuffed with huge trees lined the road. There was a hill that sloped downward. The speed limit was 30. It was impossible to keep the car to 30 going down the hill without using brakes. Would there be a policeman at the bottom of the hill? If he stopped us with Philip in his little fishnet shirt, all nicely scarred, would he be suspicious?
Where you going, miss?
I'm sorry, officer, we have this illegal party to go to and we're running late. I used my brakes going down the hill. Of course, there was no policeman. If I had been speeding, he'd have been there. Murphy's Law is the only true dependable in my life most of the time.
It's the big house on the left. Just pull into the driveway, Philip said.
The house was dark red brick, two, maybe three stories, lots of windows, at least two porches. Victorian American does still exist. The yard was large with a private forest of tall, ancient trees. The grass was too high, giving the place a deserted look. The drive was gravel and wound through the trees to a modern garage that had been designed to match the house and almost succeeded.
There were only two other cars here. I couldn't see into the garage. Maybe there were more inside.
Don't leave the main room with anyone but me. If you do, I can't help you, he said.
Help me how? I asked.
This is our cover story. You are the reason I've missed so many meetings. I left hints that not only are we lovers, but I've been...
He spread his hands wide as if searching for a word.
Cultivating you, until I felt you were ready for a party.
Cultivating me? I turned off the car and the silence settled between us.
He was staring at me. Even behind the glasses I felt the weight of his gaze.
The skin between my shoulders crawled.
You are a reluctant survivor of a real attack. Not a freak or a junkie, but I've talked you into a party. That's the story.
Have you ever done this for real? I asked.
You mean given them someone?
Yes, I said. He gave a rough snort.
You don't think much of me, do you?
What was I supposed to say, no? If we're lovers, that means we have to play lovers all evening. He smiled. This smile was different, anticipatory.
You bastard.
He shrugged and rotated his neck as if his shoulders were tight.
I'm not going to throw you down on the floor and ravish you if that's what you're worried about.
I knew you wouldn't be doing that tonight. I was glad he didn't know I had weapons. Maybe I could surprise him tonight. He frowned at me.
Follow my lead. If anything I do makes you uncomfortable, we'll discuss it.
He smiled, dazzling teeth white and even against his tan. No discussion. You'll just stop. He shrugged.
You might blow our cover and get us killed.
The car was filling with heat. A bead of sweat dripped down his face. I opened my door and got out. The heat was like a second skin. Cicadas droned, a high, buzzing song far up in the trees. Cicadas and heat. Ah, summer. Philip walked around the car, his boots crunching on the gravel.
You might want to leave the cross in the car, he said.
I had expected it, but I didn't have to like it. I put the crucifix into the glove compartment, crawling over the seat to do so. When I closed the door, my hand went to my neck. I wore the chain so much it only felt odd when I wasn't wearing it. Philip held out his hand, and after a moment I took it. The palm of his hand was cupped heat, slightly moist in the center. The back door was shaded by a white lattice arch. A clematis vine grew thick on one side. Flowers as big as my hand spread purple to the tree-filtered sun. A woman was standing in the shadow of the door, hidden from neighbors and passing cars. She wore sheer black stockings held up by garter belts. A bra and matching panties, both royal purple, left most of her body pale and naked. She was wearing 5-inch spikes that forced her legs to look long and slender.
I'm overdressed, I whispered to Philip. Maybe not for long,
he breathed into my hair.
Don't bet your life on it.
I stared up at him as I said it and watched his face crumble into confusion. It didn't last long. The smile came, a soft curl of lips.
The serpent must have smiled at Eve like that. I have this nice, shiny apple for you. Want some candy, little girl?
Whatever Philip thought he was selling, I wasn't buying. He hugged me around the waist, one hand playing along the scars on my arm, fingers digging into the scar tissue just a little. His breath went out in a quick sigh.
Jesus, what had I gotten myself into?
The woman was smiling at me, but her large brown eyes were fixed on Philip's hand where it played with my scar. Her tongue darted out to wet her lips. I saw her chest rise and fall.
Come into my parlor, said the spider to the fly. What did you say?
Philip asked. I shook my head. He probably didn't know the poem anyway. I couldn't remember how it ended. I couldn't remember if the fly got away. My stomach was tight. When Philip's hand brushed my naked back, I jumped. The woman laughed, high and maybe a little drunk. I whispered the fly's words as I went up the steps.
Oh, no, no. To ask me is in vain, for whoever goes up your winding stairs can ne'er come down again.
Ne'er come down again. It had a bad ring to it.
Chapter 25.
The woman pressed against the wall so we could pass and shut the door behind us. I kept waiting for her to lock it so we couldn't get away, but she didn't. I shoved Philip's hands off my scars, and he wrapped himself around my waist and led me down a long, narrow hall. The house was cool, air conditioning purring against the heat. A square archway opened into a room. It was a living room with all that implies. A couch, love seat, two chairs, plants hanging in front of a bay window, afternoon shadows snaking across the carpeting. Homey. A man stood in the center of the room, a drink in his hand. He looked like he had just come from Leather R Us. Leather bands crisscrossed his chest and arms, like Hollywood's idea of an oversexed gladiator. I owed Philip an apology. He'd dressed downright conservatively. The happy homemaker came up behind us in her royal purple lingerie and laid a hand on Philip's arm. Her fingernails were painted dark purple, almost black. The nails scratched along his arm, leaving faint reddish tracks behind. Philip shivered beside me, his arm tightening around my waist. Was this his idea of fun? I hoped not. A tall black woman rose from the couch. Her rather plentiful breasts threatened to squeeze out of a black wire bra. A crimson skirt with more holes than cloth hung from the bra and moved as she walked, giving glimpses of dark flesh. I was betting she was naked under the skirt. There were pinkish scars on one wrist and her neck. A baby junkie, new, almost fresh. She stalked around us like we were for sale and she wanted to get a good look. Her hand brushed my back, and I stood away from Philip, facing the woman.
That scar on your back, what is it? It isn't vampire bites.
Her voice was low for a woman, an alto tenor maybe. A sharp piece of wood was slammed into my back by a human servant. I didn't add that the sharp piece of wood had been one of the stakes I brought with me, or that I had killed the human servant later that same night.
My name's Rochelle, she said.
Anita. The happy homemaker stepped up next to me, hand stroking over my arm. I stepped away from her, her fingers sliding over my skin. Her nails left little red lines on my arm. I resisted the urge to rub them. I was a tough-as-nails vampire slayer. Scratches didn't bother me. The look in the woman's eyes did. She looked like she wondered what flavor I was and how long I'd last. I had never been looked at that way by another woman. I didn't like it much.
I'm Madge. That's my husband, Harvey, she said, pointing to Mr. Leather, who had moved to stand beside Rochelle. Welcome to our home. Philip has told us so much about you, Anita.
Harvey tried to come up behind me, but I stepped back towards the couch so I could face him. They were trying to circle like sharks. Philip was staring at me hard. Right. I was supposed to be enjoying myself, not acting like they all had communicable diseases. Which was the lesser evil? A $64,000 question if ever I heard one. Madge licked her lips slowly, suggestively. Her eyes said she was thinking naughty things about me and her. No way. Rochelle swished her skirt, exposing far too much thigh. I had been right. She was naked under the skirt. I'd die first. That left Harvey. His small, blunt-fingered hands were playing with the leather and metal studding of the little kilt he wore, fingers rubbing over and over the leather. Shit. I flashed him my best professional smile. Not seductive, but it was better than a frown. His eyes widened and he took a step towards me, hand reaching out towards my left arm. I took a deep breath and held it, smile freezing in place. His fingers barely traced over the bend of my arm, tickling down the skin until I shivered. Harvey took the shiver for an invitation and moved in closer, bodies almost touching. I put a hand on his chest to keep him from coming any closer. The hair on his chest was coarse and thick, black. I've never been a fan of hairy chests. Give me smooth any day. His arm began to encircle my back. I wasn't sure what to do. If I took a step back, I was going to sit down on the couch. Not a good idea. If I stepped forward, I'd be stepping into him, pressed against all that leather and skin. He smiled at me.
I've been dying to meet you.
He said dying like it was a dirty word or an inside joke. The others laughed. All except Philip. He took my arm and pulled me away from Harvey. I leaned into Philip, even put my arms around his waist. I had never hugged anyone in a fishnet shirt before. It was an interesting sensation.
Philip said, "Remember what I said?"
"Sure, sure," Madge said. "She's yours, all yours, no sharing, no halvesies."
She stalked over to him, swaying in her tight lace panties. With the heels on, she could look him in the eye.
"You can keep her safe from us for now, but when the big boys get here, you'll share. They'll make you share."
He stared at her until she looked away.
"I brought her here, and I'll take her home," he said.
Madge raised an eyebrow.
"You're gonna fight them? Philip, my boy. She must be a sweet piece of tail, but no bed warmer is worth pissing off the big guys."
I stepped away from Philip and put a hand flat against her stomach and pushed, just enough to make her back up. The heels made her balance bad, and she almost fell.
"Let's get something straight," I said. "I am not a piece of anything, nor am I a bed warmer."
Philip said,
"Anita, my, my, she's got a temper. Wherever did you find her, Philip?"
Madge asked. If there is anything I hate, it is being found amusing when I'm angry. I stepped up close to her, and she smiled down at me.
"Did you know," I said, "that when you smile, you get deep wrinkles on either side of your mouth? You are over 40, aren't you?"
She drew a deep, gasping breath and stepped back from me.
"You little bitch."
"Don't ever call me a piece of tail again, Madge, darling."
Rochelle was laughing silently, her considerable bosom shaking like dark brown jello. Harvey stood straight-faced. If he had so much as smiled, I think Madge would have hurt him. His eyes were very shiny, but there was no hint of a smile. A door opened and closed down the hall, farther into the house. A woman stepped into the room. She was around 50, or maybe a hard 40. Very blonde hair framed a plump face. Even Money the Blonde came out of a bottle. Plump little hands glittered with rings, real stones. A long black negligee swept the floor, complete with an open lace robe. The flat black of the negligee was kind to her figure, but not kind enough. She was overweight and there was no hiding it. She looked like a PTA member, a Girl Scout leader, a cookie baker, someone's mother. And there she stood in the doorway, staring at Philip. She let out a little squeal and came running towards him. I got out of the way before I was crushed in the stampede. Philip had just enough time to brace himself before she flung her considerable weight into his arms. For a minute I thought he was going to fall backwards into the floor with her on top, but his back straightened, his legs tensed, and he righted them both. Strong Philip, able to lift overweight nymphomaniacs with both hands. Harvey said, "This is Crystal." Crystal was kissing Philip's chest, chubby, homey little hands trying to pull his shirt out of his pants so she could touch his bare flesh. She was like a cheerful little puppy in heat. Philip was trying to discourage her without much success. He gave me a long glance. And I remembered what he had said, that he had stopped coming to these parties. Was this why? Crystal and her like? Madge of the sharp fingernails? I had forced him to bring me, but in doing so, I had forced him to bring himself. If he thought of it that way, it was my fault Philip was here. Damn, I owed him. I patted the woman's cheek softly. She blinked at me, and I wondered if she was nearsighted.
"Crystal?" I said.
I smiled my best angelic smile.
"Crystal, I don't mean to be rude, but you're pawing my date."
Her mouth fell open. Her pale eyes bugged out.
"Date?" she squeaked. "No one has dates at a party."
"Well, I'm new to the parties. I don't know the rules yet. But where I come from, one woman does not grope another woman's date. At least wait until I turn my back, okay?" Crystal's lower lip trembled. Her eyes began to fill with tears. I had been gentle, kind even, and she was still going to cry. What was she doing here with these people? Madge came and put her arm around Crystal and led the woman away. Madge was making soothing noises and patting her black silken arms. Rochelle said, "Very cold." She walked away from me towards a liquor cabinet that was against one wall. Harvey had also left, following Madge and Crystal without so much as a backwards glance. You'd think I kicked a puppy. Philip let out a long breath and sat down on the couch. He clasped his hands in front of him, between his knees. I sat down next to him, tucking my skirt down over my legs.
I don't think I can do this,
he whispered. I touched his arm. He was trembling, a constant shaking that I didn't like at all. I hadn't realized what it would cost him to come tonight, but I was beginning to find out.
We can go, I said.
He turned very slowly and stared at me.
What do you mean?
I mean we can go.
You'd leave now without finding out anything because I'm having problems?
He asked. Let's just say I like you better as the overconfident flirt. You keep acting like a real person and you'll have me all confused. We can go if you can't handle it. He took a deep breath and let it out, then shook himself like a dog coming out of water.
I can do it. If I have a choice, I can do it.
It was my turn to stare. Why didn't you have a choice before? He looked away.
I just felt like I had to bring you if you wanted to come.
No, damn it, that wasn't what you meant at all. I touched his face and forced him to look at me. Someone gave you orders to come see me the other day, didn't they? It wasn't just to find out about Jean-Claude, was it? His eyes were wide, and I could feel his pulse under my fingers.
What are you afraid of, Philip?
Who's giving you orders?
Anita, please, I can't.
My hand dropped to my lap. What are your orders, Philip? He swallowed, and I watched his throat work.
I'm to keep you safe here, that's all.
His pulse was jumping under the bruised bite in his neck. He licked his lips, not seductive, nervous. He was lying to me. The trick was, how much of a lie and what about? I heard Madge's voice coming up the hall, all cheerful seduction. Such a good hostess. She escorted two people into the room. One was a woman with short auburn hair and too much eye makeup, like green chalk smeared above her eyes. The second was Edward, smiling at his charming best with his arm around Madge's bare waist. She gave a rich, throaty laugh as he whispered something to her. I froze for a second. It was so unexpected that I just froze. If he had pulled out a gun, he could have killed me while I sat there with my mouth hanging open. What the hell was he doing here? Madge led him and the woman towards the bar. He glanced back at me over her shoulder and gave me a delicate smile that left his blue eyes empty as a doll's. I knew my 24 hours were not up. I knew that. Edward had decided to come looking for Nikolaos. Had he followed us? Had he listened to Philip's message on my machine?
What's wrong? Philip asked.
What's wrong? I said. You are taking orders from somebody. Probably a vampire. I finished the statement silently in my head. And death has just waltzed in the door to play freak while he searches for Nikolaos. There was only one reason Edward searched for a particular vampire. He meant to kill her if he could. The assassin might finally have met his match. I had thought I wanted to be around when Edward finally lost. I wanted to see what prey was too large for death to conquer. I had seen this prey up close and personal. If Edward and Nikolaos met and she even suspected that I had a hand in it, shit. Shit, shit, shit. I should turn Edward in. He had threatened me, and he would carry it out. He would torture me to get information. What did I owe him? But I couldn't do it. Wouldn't do it. A human being does not turn another human being over to the monsters. Not for any reason. Monica had broken that rule, and I despised her for it. I think I was the closest thing Edward had to a real friend. A person who knows who and what you are and likes you anyway. I did like him, despite or because of what he was. Even though I knew he'd kill me if it worked out that way? Yes, even though. It didn't make much sense when you looked at it that way. But I couldn't worry about Edward's morality. The only person I had to face in the mirror was me. The only moral dilemma I could solve was my own. I watched Edward play kissy face with Madge. He was much better at role-playing than I was. He was also a much better liar. I would not tell, and Edward had known I would not tell. In his own way, he knew me, too. He had bet his life on my integrity, and that pissed me off. I hate to be used. My virtue had become its own punishment. But maybe, I didn't know how yet, I could use Edward the way he was using me. Perhaps I could use his lack of honor as he used my honor now. It had possibilities.
Chapter 26. The auburn-haired woman with Edward came over to the couch and slid into Philip's lap. She giggled and wrapped her arms around his neck with a little kick of her feet. Her hands didn't wander lower, and she didn't try to undress him. The night was looking up. Edward followed behind the woman like a blonde shadow. There was a drink in his hand and a suitably harmless smile on his face. If I hadn't known him, I would never have looked at him and said, "There, there is a dangerous man." Edward the Chameleon. He balanced on the couch arm at the woman's back, one hand rubbing her shoulder.
"Anita, this is Darlene," Philip said.
I nodded. She giggled and kicked her little feet.
"This is Teddy. Isn't he scrumptious?"
"Teddy? Scrumptious?" I managed a smile, and Edward kissed the side of her neck. She snuggled against his chest, managing to wiggle in Philip's lap at the same time. Coordination.
"Let me have a taste."
Darlene sucked her lower lip under her teeth and drew it out slowly. Philip's breath trembled. He whispered, "Yes." I didn't think I was going to like this. Darlene cupped his arm in her hands and raised it to her mouth. She bestowed a delicate kiss over one of his scars. Then she slid her legs down between his until she was kneeling at his feet, still holding his arm. The full skirt of her dress was bunched up around her waist, caught on his legs. She was wearing red lace panties and matching garters. Color coordination. Philip's face had gone slack. He was staring at her as she brought his arm towards her mouth. A small pink tongue licked his arm, quick. Out, wet, gone. She glanced up at Philip, eyes dark and full. She must have liked what she saw because she began to lick his scars, one by one, delicate, a cat with cream. Her eyes never left his face. Philip shuddered. His spine spasmed. He closed his eyes and leaned his head back against the couch. Her hands went to his stomach. She gripped the fishnet and pulled. It slid out of his pants, and her hands stroked up bare chest. He jerked, eyes wide, and caught her arms. He shook his head. "No, no." His voice sounded hoarse, too deep.
"You want me to stop?"
Darlene asked. Her eyes were nearly closed, breath deep, lips full and waiting. He was struggling to talk and make sense at the same time.
"If we do this, that leaves Anita alone. Fair game. Her first party."
Darlene looked at me, maybe for the first time.
"With scars like that?"
"Scars are from a real attack. I talked her into the party."
He brought her hands out from under his shirt.
"I can't desert her."
His eyes seemed to be focusing again.
"She doesn't know the rules."
Darlene leaned her head on his thigh.
"Philip, please. I've missed you."
"You know what they'd do to her."
"Teddy will keep her safe. He knows the rules."
I asked, "You've been to other parties?"
"Yes," Edward said.
He held my gaze for several seconds while I tried to picture him at other parties. So this was where he got his information about the vampire world. Through the freaks.
"No,"
Philip said. He stood, bringing Darlene to her feet, still holding her forearms.
"No,"
he said, and his voice sounded certain, confident. He released her and held out his hand to me. I took it. What else could I do? His hand was sweating and warm. He strode out of the room, and I was forced to half-run in my heels to catch up with my hand. He led me down the hall to the bathroom, and we went in. He locked the door and leaned against it, sweat beaded on his face, eyes closed. I took back my hand, and he didn't fight me. I looked around at the available seating and finally chose to sit on the edge of the bathtub. It wasn't comfortable, but it seemed the lesser of two evils. Philip drew in great gulps of air and finally turned to the sink. He ran water loud and splashing, dipped his hands in, and covered his face again and again until he stood, water dripping down his face.
droplets caught in his eyelashes and hair. He blinked at himself in the mirror over the basin. He looked startled, wide-eyed. The water was dripping down his neck and chest. I stood and handed him a towel from the rack. He didn't respond. I mopped up his chest with the soft, clean-smelling folds of the towel. He finally took the towel and finished drying off. His hair was dark and wet around his face. There was no way to dry it out.
"I did it," he said.
"Yes," I said.